So we'll move to our last argument, Shaw versus Holder. Mr. Bird.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Roy L. F. Berg, and I represent the petitioner in this next matter before you, Mr. Jayesh Kumar Shaw. Your Honors, I would first like to apologize to this Court for an error of mine. I was not aware until I read Respondent's brief that the petitioner had previously been before this Court, which had dismissed in an unpublished order his prior petition for review on September 26, 2006. There was no reference to it in the Immigration Court file, the materials I had been given, nor was there any reference to it in the Board's two decisions that were in response to my motion to open and reconsider, nor was there any reference to it in the DHS responses to my motions. Nevertheless, I apologize sincerely for my oversight. When Mrs. Shaw retained me after her husband was deported in 2007, I referred her to a criminal defense attorney to try to have his conviction, the 1990 conviction based on his plea, vacated. Unfortunately, that was not successful. Neither was an appeal from that decision. I also tried
what
to obtain...
What was the nature of his sexual offense?
According to the record, of my understanding, it involved an inappropriate touching of a 9-year-old girl.
Concretely, what was the touching?
It's not clear from the record, Your Honor, and I don't know. His wife has told me that he didn't do it, but he was told to plead guilty to that offense to avoid further problems and embarrassment, so that's why he entered his plea. Mm-hmm. He was told by his criminal defense lawyer that the criminal defense lawyer would be seeking a judicial recommendation against deportation. In fact, that's what the criminal defense lawyer advised the court, Judge Joan Corboy, here in the Circuit Court of Cook County. But unfortunately, by the time he came before her again in December 1990, that provision had been eliminated from the Immigration Act as of November 29, 1990. So he would have had a very strong case for a judicial recommendation against deportation, considering the fact that there was no substantial harm to the young woman and that he was given probation. Nevertheless, as this Court has already determined, at that time he was not deportable or excludable and did not become so, at least under this case, until 1996 when the Immigration Act was changed. At that time, Congress expanded retroactively the definition of aggravated felony to include the crime of sexual abuse of a minor. He was then, several years later, placed in removal proceedings and sought relief pursuant to Section 212C of the Immigration and Nationality Act, which the Supreme Court in St. Cyr said he could still obtain because he had pled guilty before 1996. Unfortunately, that case was denied by Judge Cuevas, and the attorney did not file a direct...
Is there any argument you're making now that wasn't made in 2006?
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that Blake, which was one of the reasons the board cited to deny him 212C, concluding he was not eligible in the two decisions it issued.
Could you address my question? Is there any argument you're making now that wasn't made in 2006?
That Blake has been overturned by Judulang. Judulang was issued in 2011. First and foremost, and that's why I believe that the board...
That the answer is no. You're saying we're making the same arguments now as 7 years ago, but you think the answer the court gives should be different.
Well, perhaps I'm not understanding your question, Judge.
It's a complicated question.
Well, obviously I wasn't his attorney back then, but my understanding of their arguments...
That the Seventh Circuit has an opinion dealing with these same general arguments, surely you, in addition to reading the opinion, you look up and see what the briefs said in that case. Or maybe you didn't.
I did not obtain the briefs, Your Honor, but I did read the court's decision. Now, Blake was overturned by Judulang subsequent to the deportation of my client.
I do sort of get the drift of your current argument, and it seems to be that all decisions apply retroactively in all civil cases without respect to how much time has passed. Is there any support for that proposition? Now, it's very well established that somebody who loses a case can't get relief under Rule 60B if a year later the ground of decision is altered by the Supreme Court. That's pretty much an established principle. In fact, it's established by the Supreme Court in a case called Gonzalez against Crosby. Is there some reason why immigration cases should be different from other civil litigation in that respect?
I believe it should be different, Your Honor, because I believe that Blake was wrongly decided.
That's not a reason why immigration cases should be different. The premise in this kind of case, the Rule 60B cases, is that they are decided, and a later decision by the Supreme Court shows the decision is incorrect. And then a Rule 60B motion is filed saying we want that decision applied retroactively to this closed case. And the Supreme Court of the United States itself has held that won't happen. You cannot reopen in order to get the benefit of a new decision. Right? The premise is that the initial decision is wrong.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm asking, is there any reason why immigration cases should be handled differently? And then the next thing I'm going to ask is there any circuit that holds that they must be handled differently, even if the board wants to handle them the same?
I'm not aware of the second, Your Honor, an answer to that. I'm not aware of any authority to directly respond to your question, Your Honor. However, the consequences that this man has been suffering because of the Blake decision are very horrific. He's permanently barred from returning to this country. We've tried to get him humanitarian parole. That's been denied. We believe that the board abused its discretion in holding as negative factors the period of time that it has been since he was deported. It was not his fault that the United States Supreme Court took this period of time to reverse Blake. But Blake was wrongly decided. In fact, it had been reversed by the Second Circuit in that same case. We believe, Your Honor, that the board...
Is there anything in the statute authorizing the board to reopen decisions on account of post-removal change of law?
I believe HCFR 1003.2A allows him...
Excuse me. I said, is there anything in the statute authorizing the board? And you can't answer that question by pointing to CFR.
I apologize, Your Honor.
The answer may be yes or no. I don't know what the answer is. Can you help me?
There's a third one I don't know.
And I don't know. We sought reopening under the regulation. I believe the statute...
I take it that your answer is, in response to Judge Bauer's prompt, that you don't know.
I am not aware if the statute allows that. We sought reopening under the regulation, which is how the board addressed it, not under the statute, Your Honor. So I sought reopening under the regulation, which allows the board to reopen at any time, any case in which it's rendered a decision, even if the person has been deported.
That's a different problem. I don't even understand the concept of a motion for reopening sua sponte. If the board reopens in response to a motion, it's not sua sponte. That's just a question of what the words mean. And, of course, that's going to get you nowhere because we held in Anaya Aguiar that there's no jurisdiction to review the denial of a motion to reopen sua sponte. That's why I'm trying to figure out whether there's anything in the statute that requires or even permits the board to reopen cases to account for subsequent changes of law.
In the statutory motion to reopen, I believe there is a 90-day time limit. The regulation does not contain that time limit.
I know that. That's why I'm asking whether there's any special rule for changes of law.
In the statute, I'm not aware of one, but I don't see any preclusion.
It's gone from I don't know to no.
I don't believe there is one, Your Honor, but I don't believe there's a preclusion against it either. And I believe that's where the regulation comes in. The motion to reopen is a guard against an injustice, and it's designed to remedy an injustice, which is what was suffered here.
Yeah, but a motion to reopen is limited to 90 days. That's why we have this peculiar title on the document, which says, Motion to Reopen Sua Sponte, which, as I say, is an oxymoron.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that this was just the type of exceptional circumstance that the board has the authority and can reopen these proceedings because of the basis upon which it was denied originally, that they said he was not eligible for the relief. has been changed and overturned by Judling. I'll reserve any additional time if I may.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berg. Ms. Anton?
Hi. First and foremost, the court lacks jurisdiction under INA Section 242A2C if Mr. Shaw was found removable as an aggravated felon. To the extent that there are any legal or constitutional claims raised, the petitioner is really raising a challenge to the board's discretionary denial of reopening, which is not reviewable. Moreover, regardless of Mr. Shaw's statutory eligibility for 212C relief or the evolution of 212C case law over the years, the immigration judge originally denied the 212C application as a matter of discretion, which is both uncontested and unreviewable in this court. So, in the end, the court lacks jurisdiction for the petition for review and should dismiss it as such. And if the court has no further questions, the government rests on the
brief. Okay, thank you, Mr. Antoon. Ms. Antoon, sorry. Mr. Berg, you have any further?
How much time do we have? Your Honor, I believe you do have jurisdiction, and I would say that the respondent concedes that you do, even if he has been convicted of an aggravated felony. Now, this court in Zakoviak acknowledged the difference between expanded retroactive application of a definition and expanded retroactive application of new consequences. She concedes that you do have the jurisdiction to address constitutional claims, and questions of law. I believe I have raised both in my brief. I believe also the board, Board Member Miller, in both of his decisions, abused his discretion in that he did not properly evaluate all the things, and he diverted from established precedent, and he also used as negatives the fact that the respondent had been deported.
I don't see how there can possibly be jurisdiction over an argument that the board abused its discretion. That's just the core of the holding of an IAGR. Are you asking us to overrule that decision? I didn't
to
see
the
that
extent,
in your brief.
Well, no, I did not raise it in my brief. To the extent that it has been, it is in conflict with my argument, I would ask this court to overturn it, because I believe he did abuse his discretion, Board Member Miller, refusing to reopen.
This is just a matter of normal principles of advocacy. If you want the Court of Appeals to overrule some decision, you don't simply ignore it and then say at argument, oh, well, just overrule it. You have to develop an argument to overrule it. You have to tackle it rather than ignore it.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you to both counsel. And the court will stand in recess.